Welcome to SciGest, your fortnightly serving of digestible science from plant and food research.
Hello, welcome back to SciGest. Our topic today involves kiwifruit, protecting the environment, and how researchers discover ways to protect plant health. Some people may not know that kiwifruit is New Zealand's largest horticultural export, earning more than $2.3 billion annually. Kiwifruit is mainly grown in the North Island, although some is grown in the South Island around Nelson, but the main growing region is around Bay of Plenty in the North Island. Like all crops, growers have to deal with pests and diseases, and so research to keep plants healthy is important. Our expert today is Dr. Philip Elmer, team leader for disease control and plant pathology. Hi Phil, welcome and thanks for having the time to come on SciGest.
Hi Blue, how's it going?
Very good, thank you. So Phil, you've been involved with the development of a new treatment for kiwifruit that helps combat disease whilst also reducing potential impacts on the environment. But before we get too far into that, how did you end up working on keeping kiwifruit vines healthy?
So it really goes back to November 2010 where, you know, we had the PSA crisis. PSA, for some of your listeners, is a bacterial disease, Pseudomonas aeruginaceae, that attacks kiwifruit, and essentially it wiped out our very profitable gold variety at that time. And, you know, like a lot of researchers, we got a phone call from our bosses, which went along the lines of, stop everything, drop everything, start screening everything that you've got. You know, we've got a very large collection of naturally occurring microorganisms that we have been collecting now for nearly probably 30 years, you know, thinking that one day, you know, there's going to be something in there that's going to be of some value to somebody. So it was really as simple as that. We started screening everything that we could get our hands on. Zespri, of course, was our funding partner, and they were very enthusiastic about developing a biological solution, and particularly, obviously, something that wouldn't leave a residue on the fruit. So that's actually really how we started. I guess I would call it the Oreo Gold journey. It started with screening hundreds of microorganisms for activity against PSA.
Right. So before that huge motivation of PSA hitting, what were the more traditional methods, and did they have any use against PSA to begin with, or you were sort of starting with a blank slate for how to deal with PSA in particular?
So in the initial stages, you know, really, you know, the industry and growers particularly were just desperate to have something that was working. So you can imagine all of the, I guess, more conventional treatments, you know, were being screened. And in fact, you know, PFR scientists did find that there were three products that were effective against PSA. This was a bactericide, a inducer of plant defences called Actigard, and copper-based products. So, you know, in the initial stages, you know, during the sort of crisis, at least there were some tools that were available that could kind of manage PSA, you know, at that stage. I mean, the other thing that growers needed to do was, of course, to cut out as much infection as possible as well. So it did mean a huge change for the industry. For a crop that used to be in the past, you know, didn't require as much management.
And so I imagine that there's quite strict timing windows and things for when growers are allowed to use sprays. Did it impact on creating a motivation to open those windows before a PSA treatment came along, or how did that work?
So the treatments that they had, they could use these treatments while we were developing a new biological control, which can take anywhere between 5 and 7 years. So the products that growers will use, they can use these copper-based products between, you know, bud break and flowering and a little bit later in the year. And they can also use after harvest. They can use the bactericide before flowering. They can use the plant defense elicitor before flowering. The difficulty for a lot of growers is that you'll notice that a lot of these treatments are going on sort of, you know, early in the season, and it actually left growers with very, very little to use in that flowering period and that post-flowering period. So, you know, there has been, you know, a lot of the crop is being protected by copper throughout the season. They can use the copper in the Actigard plant defence elicitor after fruit harvest, and some growers will do that. But we're still left with, you know, big gaps in the spray program, and that's where they saw a biological that would fit in well. It would also help those growers that are wanting to reduce their dependence on copper-based products. And there's quite a few of them that were very conscious of the fact that, you know, they didn't want to be spraying copper all the time.
That sounds interesting, how there's this opportunity to fill these gaps and provide a more sustainable solution. So you mentioned your product is called Oreo Gold. So I was just wondering if you could explain what that is exactly and how you discovered it.
It had very humble beginnings. So as we were going through the screening process, we often have a code for all of our microorganisms, and this is a culture collection code. And what we noticed was that there was a particular interesting, we'll call it a yeast, that was completely inhibiting PSA when it was grown in the lab. And then, of course, our next stage is to take that on to small potted plants in a containment glasshouse. And, you know, we had this process of screening. When we went back into the collection and looked at where this organism came from, it actually came originally from apricots from Central Otago. So we thought, well, that's going to make a great story one day, that a microorganism from New Zealand growing on New Zealand apricots is being used to protect kiwifruit in the North Island against PSA. So it's a great story. We were able to fast-track, you know, this particular biological control agent. In the past, we've been able to successfully commercialise biological control agents within, say, 7 years. But given the urgency and the partnerships that we had with Zespri and also with our commercial partner, E-Tech, which is now UPL, you know, we were able to have lots of different parts of the program running at the same time. And we were able to get this to the market in 5 years, which is we've never been able to do that before. But again, with a concerted team effort, we were able to get this product to the marketplace. And for us, it was extremely satisfying because, you spend a huge amount of time and effort with the team that we've got on developing this. And you want to see it used in the field by growers. That's hugely satisfying. And when it first went to market, I think it sold out within 3 days. So that was a real bonus for us. So as you can imagine, clearly we're not producing enough, but that's probably something else we'll come on to fairly soon, I imagine.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting story, all right. Just back to when you first found it on an apricot, was that involved in some other work or you routinely checking for microorganisms around in orchards and stocking them away in your bank? Or what was the cause for saving it in the first place? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lovely part of the story in the sense that sometimes we've been referred to as magpies. You know, anything that's a little bit shiny and a little bit different will grab it. And other people will call us stamp collectors. You know, we just have to collect stuff. So we collect microorganisms. So this was a project that I had with a colleague in Central Otago, and we were looking at a new prediction system for brown rot. And of course, anyone that's bought peaches, nectarines or apricots and put them in their fruit bowl and later they've got brown spots all over them, well, that's brown rot. And sometimes, you know, one of the rules that when you're looking for new biological controls, if you're looking for something new or different, you go to a place where you expect to see a lot of disease, but there isn't disease there. So there has to be a reason for that. Yeah. I was getting all these fruit samples. We were trying to develop a prediction system for brown rot. And I noticed in this tray of fruit that there were obviously those that were rotting, but there were clearly some of the fruit in there that weren't rotting at all. And I thought, something's protecting those fruit from rot. So long story short, I incubated those fruit for a little bit longer, and then this yeast started coming out of the fruit. It was actually all over the fruit. And I thought, now that's really interesting. I've got to have that. So we isolate it, purify it, put it into our minus 80 freezers, and it'll be sort of like, yep, one day we'll get round to screening that for someone. So that's literally what we do. You know, we just collect as many as possible.
Yeah, wow, that's very cool. It's a very cool way to find something and how you're able to find it and purify it. So half the case must be finding it, but to be able to find the particular organism on the fruit as well, I imagine you know, there'd be many microorganisms present. So to find the one that was causing the protection as well, it seems quite amazing.
There is some serendipity over this because, you know, we were collecting a lot of different things that were growing on these fruit. These are all naturally occurring, you know, and these are all out there in the wild. They're just, in a sense, waiting for us to find them. Finding the right organism, actually, to be honest with you, isn't that hard if you know what you're doing.
Right.
Okay. And we've been doing this now for 25 years. You know, we've got a pretty good on handle on how to do stuff. And so when we're looking for a new microorganism, okay, we can find, say, 100 of those, and they're all working really well. But we have to find the special one that kind of ticks every box. And what I mean by every box is, yes, it's obviously got to work against the pathogen, rule number one. And probably the second most important rule is, can we produce this organism quickly? So, you know, you can imagine we can find stuff that might work really well, but, oh my God, it takes 2 weeks to produce in a culture. That's commercially, that's going to be a dead duck.
Do you have to go back to finding more if it won't grow fast enough? Or are there things you can do as far as sort of selecting specific lines from that same microorganism, like sort of like a breeding program, I guess, but
yeah,
I don't know how that might work.
That's a really good analogy. So I would have mentioned earlier that we would start with, say, 100 of this particular yeast, and they've all come from different parts of plants. To give you some ideas, some of them came from native Hebes, some of them came from grapes, and this came from our grape projects that we've been doing for 10 years, and some of these came from fruits. So we've got a very, very similar organism that's coming from a very diverse range of environments. And that's really important because, you know, we don't actually know in that 100 which is the one that's going to come through all the different gates. Does it yield a lot in a culture flask or a fermentation vessel? Yes, it does. Excellent. Then it allows that organism to go through to the next gate. So if we take that organism out of the flask and then we formulate it, does it die? Some of the strains do. We've learnt that some of the ones that we were testing in that 100, essentially they died. You know, they couldn't take the desiccation stresses, the drying stress, when we dry it down to make it into a granule. And so that was another important criteria. So you can kind of see you start with your 100, then you're down to 50, then you're down to 10, and then you're down to 5. And then you probably would then go out into the field and then find which of those 5 is the best one in the field. And to some extent, that's what we were doing with the Oreo Gold. You know, we were kind of narrowing it down, and until we found the one that we were pretty confident was going to work.
Yeah, right. That's really interesting how you were able to take advantage of natural variation and you just run it through your set of filters and it kind of bubbles to the top. Mm. And so you mentioned that it's called a biological control agent. So there seems to be a few different names that these things can be called. Is that the most preferred name?
Yeah, I think that's the one that most people are familiar with because, you know, they'll hear about, say, for example, a biological control agent for an insect pest. They'll hear about a biological control agent for wasps. So really what these are these are naturally occurring organisms that are antagonistic to, you know, the pathogen that we're interested in.
Right. So I can imagine there's lots of consideration given to pollinators and pollination, and that must come in with the critical timing windows of existing sprays. So how does Oreo Gold work with pollination?
Yeah, as you can imagine with something like kiwifruit, pollination is just absolutely critical. And of course, the most important pollinator of our kiwifruit is of course the honeybee. So anything that we produce, and as we go through that sort of screening process, you know, we have to be able to demonstrate to Zespri and of course to their growers that this is bee safe. This microorganism is not going to affect the bee if it lands on the bee. It's not going to affect the bee if the bee ingests it during the, you know, as it's going for the nectar. And another factor that, you know, we didn't realise at the time, but, you know, when we worked very closely with the pollination team here at Ruakura, is that some products will actually affect adversely the behaviour of the bees. So they might get a little bit confused, or they might not be able to find the hive again. So you can appreciate there was a very large chunk of work looking at making sure this was bee safe. Now, what was really exciting for us, you know, we use the OECD guidelines for demonstrating this. We couldn't actually find a lethal dose of Oreo Gold that would negatively impact on the bees. So what that means is, if it lands on the bee, it doesn't affect it. If it's ingested by the bee, doesn't adversely affect it, and it doesn't adversely affect the bee's behaviour. So for us, that's really exciting, because in kiwi fruit, particularly over the flowering period, you can't apply anything. And this product would actually give growers the opportunity to use something, and they can have the confidence that it's not going to adversely affect their bees. Now, you know, there's a small caveat on that, you know, which is if you put an additive in the Oreo Gold mixing tank, it's that additive could be toxic to bees. So, you know, my advice to anybody would be, you know, if you do need to spray over the flowering period, don't put an additive in there, because the bee team will, and the pollination team will tell us, that will negatively impact upon the bees.
So yeah. Sometimes something like a surfactant or something is added to the sprays, is that what you're meaning, or people just have different mixes that they use?
Yeah, sometimes they like to mix different products. So we had to do hundreds of tests to show that the products that kiwi fruit growers will typically use in a season, and this might range from an insecticide or a biological control for insect pests, or a foliar nutrient. We had to show that the Oreo Gold was compatible with those products, because what we don't want is a situation where a grower goes and mixes this product with something and it's toxic to our biological control, i.e. it kills it.
Right, yeah. That seems really amazing to me about the no effect found on bees, because I can only guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the more traditional methods must be quite bad for the bees. So this ability of Oreo Gold to reduce that impact sounds really promising. That's quite cool. And so, having found a product such as this, how do you go through the developmental pipeline of okay, here we've got this product that's working, and then how do you scale up, and, you know, how did you get it made to commercial levels?
Again, one of the gates that this organism had to pass through was, did it produce very, very good yields in the fermenter tanks, and did it produce them quickly? And it's a little bit like home brewing, you know, it's the bug, you know, and you start your fermentation. It probably reaches the peak number that it's going to produce within sort of two, and that's really from a commercial production perspective, that's really, really attractive, because what that means is they can get it into the tank, they can get it out in 3 days, and then they can start another fermentation. So that meant that they could produce bulk quantities of this organism really quickly.
Is this something that, you know, looking into the future, that will be used in combination with existing treatment methods, or how does the future of PSA control look now that this product is available?
I'll start with the longer term future. The longer term future, and Plant and Food has, you know, a very successful kiwi fruit breeding program. So the long term future, of course, are varieties with all those desirable traits that is also resistant to PSA. That's the longer term future. And what's exciting about that for us is that usually you can find that with those either partially resistant or resistant varieties, that they might only need one or two applications. And that often works really well in concert with a biological control, because the plant's defending itself and the biological's kind of there to mop up anything that might still be in the orchard. Working sort of backwards, so in the sort of intermediate space, you know, we see the biological being used to reduce grower emphasis on copper. So, for example, some of our growers who have been using the product, that's what they've been using it for, so they can reduce the number of copper applications that's going on their vines and going into their environment. And for others, it's, you know, they've got this risky period, you know, particularly in our New Gold variety, in post-flowering and early fruit set. Sometimes, you know, coppers will potentially damage the skin, and that's a bit of a gamble. So they see that period in early fruit set as a as another opportunity to use a biological and not damage the fruit. So again, another one of those gates that we had to go through. We had to do a lot of crop safety trials on different varieties. So on our green variety, our gold variety, and also in different regions, because every region kind of has a unique environmental profile that differs. So we had to demonstrate that regardless of the variety or the environment, it did not damage the fruit. In the very, very short term, you know, we have a manufacturer in Germany. The scale of this operation is just almost beyond belief. You know, they have these 100,000 litre fermenters, you know, which are three stories high. I've visited this factory. You know, you have to go up three stories to get to the top. At the very top there, there's an inspection port, and you can actually see the organism brewing inside these huge vats. So they're making that for us at the moment, and UPL are bringing that into the country for kiwifruit growers this coming spring, and they're basically manufacturing as fast as they can. Because, you know, we've got a lot of kiwifruit growers out there who are very, very anxious to get their hands on it. And, of course, we're very keen for them to use it as well.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a huge scale. I'm just wondering if there's scope for New Zealand production.
So, you know, our commitment is to make sure that New Zealand Inc. and New Zealand kiwifruit growers particularly benefit from this product first. You know, that was really important to us. What we've been finding, the more that we work with this organism, we've been finding, for example, that it's effective against some pathogens of other fruits. Mostly these are fungal pathogens. So that's quite exciting, because what that means is that beyond kiwifruit, we've also got other possible markets. So, for example, the Europeans particularly are interested in perhaps using this as a post-harvest treatment, because, you know, we don't get a residue on the fruit. It's a naturally occurring organism. It's a very, very common organism. It's not hard to find at all. The trick really was that the plant and fruit processes that we went through to make sure that we had the best available. And so that for us is really exciting, because we want to see it used in New Zealand by as many people as possible. So we're quite anxious at the moment to see if it would be valuable for avocado growers. But similarly, you know, the markets in Europe are quite large as well. So, you know, in a sense, there's a domestic emphasis, but we have to have an international emphasis as well, because, you know, we've got a northern hemisphere and we've got a southern hemisphere. In terms of what I'd like to see, we've got a unique New Zealand naturally occurring organism, but we're actually having to get it manufactured offshore. Whereas what we should be doing is investing into, you know, manufacturing plant in New Zealand to have a New Zealand sourced and a New Zealand made product that, you know, we could export to the world.
Yeah, that would be great to see. And then, so you mentioned avocados. Have you got any indication on what other crops it might be useful against, or is it too soon to tell?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, we sort of kind of can't help ourselves really sometimes. We're just so curious to find out what other uses this organism has. So, yeah, we do try it on other crops. It's early days for us. You know, we're looking to find out how broad the range of activity of this new biological control is. So, for example, we're planning now to test this on avocados. We've done preliminary tests. They are very, very promising. But, you know, we have to report this to the client first because they paid for it. But that's looking very promising. We also want to turn our attention to apples because there's several pathogens there where we think that it could have value. Grapes is another one that we should look at as well because, of course, you know, many of our sectors now, in order for them to get access to Europe, it really almost has to be residue. Well, it actually has to be residue-free or extremely low pesticide residue on our produce. And, you know, the biologicals can allow you to do that because they don't leave a chemical residue on the fruit.
Where do we see this program going in the future?
So as you can imagine, you know, we don't like to stand still. There's always ways in which you can make something that you've got that's working well work even better. So the program that we're focusing on at the moment is looking at, again, I'll use the word screening, you know, finding the companion or the additive. This could be a natural product, or it could even be another microorganism that we can add to the existing product to make it work even better, but perhaps more importantly, under a wider range of conditions, you know, sort of from cool, dry, right through to sort of warm, wet conditions. So that's where we're heading. We're pretty excited about that with some of the preliminary findings. So need to watch this space, and we'll come back hopefully in the very near future to talk about where we've got to with that new companion product.
And so I think with that, well, thank you for your time, Phil. It's really interesting to hear about such a new awesome product as Oreo Gold.
Cool. Thanks very much, Blue.
And thank you to our SciGest listeners. We shall see you next time.